This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, the best-selling author of Retire Secure and the Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Now on the air and online worldwide at retiresecure.com. Get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. I'm your host, Hannah Haytainen Kay, and of course I'm here with Jim Lang, CPA, attorney, and best-selling author of the first and second edition of Retire Secure and the Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Jim's guest tonight is PJ Denuso, CPA, PFS. He is a nationally recognized expert in investment management who has appeared in or on numerous national and international publications and TV shows. PJ has been rated by Paladin Registry Investor Watchdog as a five-star advisor, scoring in the top 1% out of over 800,000 advisors in America. His firm, Denuso Index Advisors Incorporated, has been consistently ranked as one of the top 500 firms in the country on numerous occasions by multiple national publications. Tonight, PJ and Jim will be discussing what would be a rational response to all this market turmoil. But before we get into the meat of today's program, we feel morally obligated to tell you that Jim does have a financial interest with a portion of our guests' financial planning practice. Usually his guests, whether they are IRA experts, estate planning experts, or even investment experts, are completely independent, and Jim has no financial interest in any business with them. That is not the case with PJ Denuso. PJ and Jim have an agreement to split fees on accounts that Jim brings to him, and they work on together. Typically, for these accounts, Jim will meet with the clients, and either he or someone in his office will examine such issues as Roth IRA conversions, how much the client can spend, what is going on with the client's estate plan, their retirement plan, and what is going on with their family, etc. That is a different skill than actually managing their money. That is what PJ and his firm, Denuso Index Advisors, does. Rather than paying each of us a fee, or each of them a fee, they charge a fair fee, 1% per year or less for both of the services that Jim and his office and PJ and his office would normally charge for just investment services. Coupled with the excellent results of low-cost index investing with Dimensional Funds with PJ and getting strategic direction from Jim and the Lang Financial Group, they believe the client is getting outstanding big-picture advice, as well as excellent money management services, and all for one fair fee that is typical of just investing advice. Before I turn it over to Jim tonight, I want to remind our listeners that the show is live, so please feel free to call in with your request for PJ. The number is 412-333-9385. Again, that is 412-333-9385. Good evening, Jim, and welcome to the show, PJ.
Good evening.
PJ, right now, and we'll get to individual questions, but the overall theme of today's show is what is a rational investor to do in an irrational world? And I've heard this from client after client. Nothing is like it ever was before. We're in completely unique and individual time. And some of the trends, when I show people 5 and 10 and even 50 and 70 year periods, they often think that none of that is relevant. So that's going to be, let's say, one of the themes I hope to talk to tonight. But rather than just going on a general area, I thought I would bring up some of the individual things that cause turmoil with our markets and the way we think. So let's start specifically with the debt situation, coupled by some populist political victories in both Greece and France. And certainly those countries, particularly Greece, is really on the ropes. And that will certainly have some international influence. PJ, how do you see what is going on in Europe impacting our economy? And what, if anything, should investors do about it?
What I would say, Jim, you know, there's a significant number of topics that you're discussing. It's almost like a culmination here, as you said, as far as investor emotions with sort of what's going on in the four corners of the world right now. From our perspective, we'd look at this as our response to it would be to stay on your plan. And by staying on your plan, first of all, you'd have to have a plan. So our firm does not do any projections, prognosticating. We couldn't have opinions as far as the Euro situation in Greece and the challenges with the socialist structure economically. But one thing that's unique, as you had mentioned earlier about the track record, that one of the things that you'll hear during situations such as this is the famous phrase, well, quote unquote, it's different this time. And there are a number of very unique things, again, going on across the world. But when we go back and take a look at and what drives our confidence level in our portfolio management is, we know what our U.S. large indexes, small, large value, small value, have done going back to almost back to the mid-1920s. And if we think about that period of time, some things we can't even appreciate now regarding world wars, regional conflicts across the globe, inflation, deflation, stagflation, presidential assassinations. So really, as trying as these times are for some individual investors, we would get back to our mantra to stay on your plan. And oftentimes what we find when we're meeting with individuals for the first time is they really don't have a plan. Under that scenario, I would agree that a high degree of anxiety, it would be appropriate because they don't have a plan.
Well, one of the things, I kind of get it. You know, I'm trying to picture what it was like, let's even say, during the World Wars, World War I, World War II, Korean War. I actually have a lot of engineers. If you want to make an engineer happy, ask them for the intricate details of the bomb shelter that they dug out. And I'm not kidding, by the way, and there's a lot of engineers smiling right now, that they dug out in their backyard because they actually feared that there was going to be a nuclear attack. And so sometimes we think that we're in such unique times that have nothing to do with anything else, and that the scariest times imaginable, and sometimes we forget, hey, we have been through, obviously not identical scary times, but different times. Would you say that the people who have already gone through these different things, the world wars, the depressions, the inflation, the deflation, the stagflation, the presidential assassinations, people who are worried about literally getting blown to smithereens, that the people who actually stayed with their plan that whole time ended up doing better?
Yes, they would have ended up doing better. The numbers for Dalbar Research Company out of Boston, Massachusetts, just over the past 20-year periods of time, the average individual equity investor has done between 3 to 4% per year, capturing only about 40% of the rate of return of the actual funds that they were in. So again, from our perspective, when we're doing our financial planning, retirement income planning along and dovetailing that into the investment management strategy and asset allocations that are appropriate, that's, again, what we see is that void, that lack of a plan. And in that case, as I said, if you don't have a plan, I mean, there is going to be a high degree of anxiety in a lot of cases.
All right. Now, what you said, I want to dissect that a little bit, because I think what you said is very important. So what you're saying is that this highly accredited research company came out and said that investors get between 3 and 4% less of an annual return than the underlying investment. So let's say somebody is in the XYZ mutual fund, and over a 5 or 10 year period, the XYZ mutual fund averages, let's say, 6% rate of return, including both dividends and appreciation. Is what you're saying is somebody who is invested in that mutual fund, and let's forget fees for the moment, would be getting 3 or 4% less than the fund gets?
Yeah, with Dalbar is, and if we use a round number just to make the math easy, if the average rate of return for the active mutual fund that individuals were invested in over a period of time, if the total return was 10%, the average individual owner their return was 42%. So let's say 4.2%, you know, 4 to 4.5% was their total return. And what you see again is individuals.
Wait, so it's a 5.8% difference?
Yes. Yeah, it's astonishing. And it's the same thing on the bond side also. Bonds aren't any easier for the average individual to hold on to either. The average hold time for the average individual investor is approximately three years and 3 months, about 3.25 years. So they come to the party late and they leave the party early. They're constantly changing their portfolio holdings, rotating, you know, every 3 to 4 years.
All right, so let's bring that back to the situation in Europe right now. So let's say right now that somebody has a well-diversified portfolio that includes some funds that have some companies that are headquartered in somewhere in Europe. And right now, you know, I know it's pretty natural to think, oh my goodness, you know, I have an interest in a mutual fund, or in your case, because you do actually index funds, I have an interest in index funds that are headquartered in Greece or France or one of these places with tremendous financial turmoil, and I'm feeling pretty uneasy about it. And let's say that I get nervous, and I think frankly a lot of people were tuning in expecting you to say, oh yeah, get the heck out of everything that's European. But maybe the price of these mutual funds and index funds are lower exactly because of the turmoil, and that rather than it being something to be dreaded and feared, it might be an economic opportunity. Is that right?
Yes, it would be, from a rebalancing portfolio perspective, it would be an economic opportunity. For example, the first major asset class, if we just think of that in plain English, of different areas across the world to invest in, U.S. large and small stocks, international large and small, emerging markets. International large value stocks just went negative the other day. The year got off to a very nice start, but as the euro crisis has continued to escalate, that's showing up in the European prices. And generally, across the board, whenever you're investing in an asset class, as you said, you would hope that you know that these areas aren't going out of business, that they're going to provide they're going to regress to the mean. I mean, if they've averaged a certain rate of return due to the premiums that are in that area of the market, yeah, you feel reasonably certain if you hold that over the rest of your life that you're going to get close to that rate of return would be the expectations. And again, I need to mention here, Jim, if anyone's scratching their head on this one, that if you do your planning properly, as we've discussed before, you need to take care of your food, clothing, shelter, and transportation costs, your fixed core expenses in retirement, with a different type of portfolio. That's going to be something that's a guaranteed income, an ultra-conservative portfolio, a U.S. laddered bond portfolio, et cetera, so you can truly match up the rest of your portfolio with your true risk tolerance. What you see in a lot of cases is individuals don't have that taken care of. Again, there hasn't been any planning. And then again, justifiably so, they have their entire portfolio floating up and down with the market, and they're reading the paper and watching the stock channels and looking at their portfolio and saying, hey, you know, that I have to grab my electric bill out of there somewhere. And it does heighten their anxiety. So they need to, go through a more thorough planning process, take care of their risk capacity first, get that out of the way where they can be able to enjoy the premiums that are available in the market over the rest of their retirement plan. Again, we're looking at, on average, at least a 30-year plan for every client that enters retirement. So if we initially are talking to someone 5 to 10 years before they retire, you're looking at a 35 to 40-year plan. And with that amount of time on your side, the probabilities are extraordinarily high that you're going to achieve success.
All right. Now, if I actually do want to get back to the different asset allocation portfolios, because I think that's really important. It's also very important in the context of our discussion. But one of the things that I heard was, if you are doing so right now, let's say Europe and international funds are down, presumably because of the exact things that we're reading in the paper, but that you're not going to be using that money to pay your electric bill, that money is going to be invested in the long term, that if the price is down now because of what might be considered noise, that it actually might be a buying opportunity. And again, I know that you're not an active money manager trying to outsmart the market, but I do know that you have both an automated and with a human eye look at asset allocation and diversification and rebalancing. So if somebody, let's say, lost a significant portion of their investment in, let's say, international markets because it went down, that you wouldn't say, oh, gee, we better get out completely before it goes down more. You would say, hey, this is an opportunity to actually get something, not because it's based on your analysis that it's a great price, but just because based on the original plan that you had that had a certain percentage of international, you're now lower than that percentage.
Yes, and you'd want to maintain it. Actually, right now, if you were in a scenario where you're doing rebalancing in a portfolio and your clients were taking a withdrawal out of a portfolio, if there was a need to do the rebalancing trades in a scenario such as this, you could hypothetically be selling some U.S. large cap stocks, which have done the best today, the S&P 500, and buying into some international large cap stocks, which have done the worst. Again, emotionally, your gut feeling when you look at that is it's counterintuitive. You would say, you know, this appears to be painful. Why am I doing this? But again, over the long run, you're going to be well rewarded by rebalancing in that manner.
All right. So if I get this right, the natural reaction is, oh my goodness, Europe is miserable. And we'll talk about some of the other miserable areas of the world and the investment community. So I better get out. But what you're doing then is you're ultimately selling low. And then when things, quote, look good or are back to normal, if there is such a thing, then you, and you're feeling good about it, you buy. So what you're ultimately doing is you're selling low and buying high, which is, I guess, one of the primary reasons that a mutual fund investor gets such a small percentage. And what is it again? You said if it's 10% for the mutual fund, that the average investor is only getting about 6%?
No, 42% of that number. So technically 4.2% is their rate of return the last 20 years.
See, that's so incredible to me. So doing what probably a lot of people were expecting for us to say, hey, yeah, Europe is miserable, get out of there. Or, you know, with the U.S. economy, it's time to go to all cash or something like that. That if they do that type of behavior, which I think is fairly typical, particularly for a non-professional investor who reads the papers and who listens to the radio, etc., that they're only going to get 4-point-something% out of 10% for an investment that does 10%.
And what you had mentioned, Jim, you know, whenever individuals do get out of the market and they want to get back in, generally the market has to move up at least 20% off of the bottom before the average individual is comfortable moving it back into the market. So if you miss a 20 or 25% run, again, that's one of the chief factors that contributes to that low rate of return.
Okay, guys, we're going to have to take a quick break. What I do want to mention to Jim, because he brought up bomb shelters, we're one of those families that has one in our backyard, 16 by 20 foot bomb shelter, complete with air holes and escape hatch, the whole bit. So that kind of was interesting. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. And I do want to remind our listeners out there that we are live tonight. If you have any questions for PJ or Jim, please give us a call at 412-333-9385. We'll be right back with PJ Denuso and Jim Lang on the Lang Money Hour.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. This is Hannah Haytainen-Kay, and I'm here with Jim Lang and PJ Denuso.
PJ, it's actually interesting that you mentioned something about sticking with your asset allocation, because I remember one of my favorite financial authors of all time, Jonathan Clemens, formerly of the Wall Street Journal, used to say it's more important to stick with your financial plan and your financial asset allocation than actually having the best one to begin with. In other words, whether you're somewhat conservative or in the middle or even aggressive, that it's better to kind of stay the course. But I wanted to go back because you said something about if you're counting on your international stocks, for example, that typically are the most volatile, or emerging markets or something like that, to pay for your electric bill next month, then maybe it would be pretty nerve-wracking to have investments in some of these volatile areas. But you also mentioned that you really literally have different asset allocations for different purposes. Now, I think a lot of people think that intuitively. So, you know, for the next year, I want to have most of my money in cash and something very conservative, then maybe 1 to 5 years a little bit more aggressive, 6 to 10 years, etc. Can you talk, but usually most financial advisors, and for no other reason other than perhaps it's just additional work to set up separate accounts, can you talk a little bit about separate accounts and different asset allocation strategies for different purposes of the money?
Sure, Jim. This all goes in with the, you know, the heavy lifting up front, instead of just, you know, everybody wants to get out there and just manage money. But there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be laid first. And what we tell clients, you know, after we've gone through a personal balance sheet for them, their assets and liabilities, and a current income statement, retirement projections, one of the things that we'll tell them hypothetically, if they were to mentally, just hypothetically, bring all their portfolios in and we were to monetize that and stack up their money from the floor to the ceiling and take a look at that stack, dollar bills towards the bottom of that stack versus the middle versus the top, although they may look the same when we pull them out of that stack, are really quite different. The initial at the bottom regarding cash reserves, you know, if you have 12 months set aside for your average monthly expenses, at least 12 times that number, then the next port, of course, that would be zero in stocks, zero, 100, certainly FDIC insured on most of those assets. Then for that risk capacity bucket that's going to pay for that food, clothing, shelter, and transportation, if we're building a portfolio for that, we'll be somewhere between 20 and 30% in stocks. So let's say on average 25% in stocks and 75% in bonds. You know, you take a look at the last 50 years, even including 08, 09, the worst year for that, that portfolio, the worst year, it was down approximately 5%. That's something that to have that extra growth that most people can live with. Of course, if they couldn't, then we'd make it more conservative. Then the next layer for the rest of their expenses, and again, you'd mentioned earlier about maintaining purchasing power and the sensitivity of inflation. Whenever you go into these periods that we're going through right now, inflation is certainly not at the top of the average individual's mind regarding investment management. But again, if you have a 30-year-plus plan for retirement, it is going to have a significant effect on your purchasing power for the rest of your life. So let's say at the end of the day on that portfolio, when you enter retirement, you're at 40% in stocks, 40% in stocks and 60% in bonds. Then oftentimes clients will have money left over at the top of that stack, at the top of the pile, and say, you know what, we're analyzing this. We've done all of our cash flow. We've looked at this. We really have a pragmatically just a very good feel for how everything's flowing. And we're probably not going to touch this money at the top of the stack. So this really is our legacy bucket. We just refer to it as just the Danuzzo money bucket stack analysis. So we stack this up and we assign it to different various buckets. And we often end up with three different asset allocations, one for that food, clothing, shelter, and transportation, the guaranteed income, the next one for the risk tolerance, and a top one for the legacy. And that's where we've come in contact with a lot of coming from the other side for the Roth IRA conversions. And really, this is on a time horizon based on children, grandchildren, heirs, et cetera. And those portfolios are often at least 70% in stocks up to 100. And those can be very comfortably maintained because they understand that those time horizons are at least 30, 40, in most cases, 50, 60, 70 years or greater.
Yeah, and that's actually very interesting. We actually had a show that talked about different ways to invest different types of money. So we were talking about how to invest IRAs and how to invest, let's call it, after-tax dollars, and how to invest Roth IRA dollars. And if you'll recall, since my general preferred method of spending is to spend the money that you've already paid taxes on before your IRAs, and to spend your IRAs before you spend your Roth IRAs, and to spend your Roth IRAs dollars last, that's kind of consistent with the bucket theory, which the Roth IRAs is most likely what you might call the legacy bucket, and that might be invested, as you said, 70, 30, or even 100% in stocks, which still you're getting safety through the enormous diversification. What is there? With your 100% stock portfolio, what is it, like something like 18,000 companies represented?
Yeah, still 18,000 stocks worldwide in over 40 countries. So, yeah, true full diversification.
Yeah, so what you're doing is you're getting your safety, not necessarily by running to bonds. They're going to pay not a lot in today's dollars, but for long-term money, you're getting your safety through diversification, and if it goes up a little, down a little bit, you can probably live with it if it's long term. And then let's say for the more intermediate, that might be IRA dollars, then you're still going to have a different asset allocation than you are for, let's say, the short term, either 1 year or even years 1 to 5.
Yes, and that is correct, Jim. That ties in exactly to what you had in I know at least one of your books. That, you know, we are recommending on average we're spending from the non-qualified, the taxable accounts first. And generally, sometimes will be a blend in there because most clients, we want to identify over a long period of time. Again, we'll set a minimum threshold on it. A lot of clients will agree on a minimum comfort level. So we're taking assets out of those accounts. Then secondarily, the IRA accounts, as you mentioned. And then our final option is the Roths. We want to let those ride. In a lot of cases, we never even come close to touching them. It's just from the taxable accounts plus the IRA assets.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I think that's so smart because I've been intimately involved in probably hundreds of millions, maybe even billions of dollars of Roth IRA conversions that we have recommended or that we have ran numbers for or that as a result of the talks that I've given all over the country or even the book, The Roth Revolution. And it's pretty rare that I hear people actually spending the Roth IRA. Usually what seems to happen is, and particularly after our firm runs numbers, and we're usually not fans of huge whopper conversions, but a series of small ones, is that that money really is never spent. And a lot of the conversions that I oversaw, let's say, in the late 90s and early 2000s are still sitting there, and that is the intent. And it just makes sense that money that will eventually go to children or even grandchildren. I know in my own case, my wife and I made a Roth IRA conversion of $250,000in 1998. And it is likely that we will never spend that money, and that money will go to our children or even potentially grandchildren. So it doesn't make sense. No matter how bad the euro is, no matter what's going on with the populist political victories in Greece and France, to invest that in terms of a short-term investment. And I actually might, through rebalancing, and specifically if I'm setting that account in a separate account that's being managed differently, we have a much greater opportunity for significant growth, don't we?
Yes, that is correct. And just and I always draw back to one of the few things that supposedly intrigued Albert Einstein while he graced us while he was on Earth was the miracle of compounding. So it may not seem like a lot. Again, numbers really don't transfer too well through the radio waves here, but to compound at 2 or 3 or 4% greater, or something growing at 8 or 9% versus 4 or 5 or 6, your grandchildren will have a very large smile on her face.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation. We'll be right back with PJ Januzzo and Jim Lang on the Lang Money Hour.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. This is Hannah Haytainen Kay, and I'm here with Jim Lang and PJ Denuso.
PJ, one of the things that I kind of get it, what you're saying about some of the anxiety in Europe, that in the big long picture, that this actually might be a buying opportunity, but certainly not a situation where you want to dump everything. Let me tell you what one of my personal fears is, and I'm not quite sure what to do about it, both as a person and an investor and somebody who gives advice to the public. Right now, we don't know exactly what's going on with Iran, but there is at least a reasonable chance that they are attempting to develop a nuclear bomb and nuclear material that could potentially be detonated, whether it be on Israeli soil in Europe or even smuggled to the United States. Pakistan has quite a bit of, and that's actually documented and known, nuclear capabilities. North Korea is also scary to me, and perhaps some of these countries might not even detonate something themselves, but they might distribute to fundamentalist extremists. And I would say, even I don't mean to be a doom and gloom guy, but there's lots of other opportunities for terrorists, you know, with chemical plants and transportation and stadiums and things like that. And as tragic as 9/11 is or was, there is the possibility of something on an even greater scale. How would that enter into the investment picture, if it does at all?
Well, that would enter in, Jim. I would just consider that under the same category of the responses that I had earlier, in that we always think that it's unique and what we're going through in anyone's individual life that other individuals haven't gone through before. But we really have gone through, if never the exact same thing, but it certainly rhymes with what we're looking at now. And again, if to go back to our plan, and if you stay on your plan and you have one, if you have your cash reserves amply funded, if you have your food, clothing, and shelter budget, if you will, your portfolio funded, and you've got a moderate allocation in your risk tolerance, there's really nothing that you would want to do to upset any of those areas. Now, sometimes individuals will, in their cash reserves, have an extra item and be over and above what our recommendation is. And sometimes the topic of gold or precious metals will come up. Very rarely would you ever see anyone, I think, responsibly, generally speaking, talk about having more than 5% of precious metals in your portfolio. So even for consideration, $1 million portfolio, if someone had $50,000 in gold coins, etc., that would be, I mean, a very large, well, a lot higher than national averages, certainly. But really, that would be the extent of protection as far as portfolio insurance, just reacting, human emotions. And there's a lot of folks even on talk shows that give advice, you know, and that's really great that you brought that up, because I'm just thinking of one thing that we run into an awful lot. And we tell people that we talk to, both clients as well as prospective clients, when we're doing consulting work, that if you're going to pay attention to anyone regarding investment advice, to only listen, and I can repeat, only individuals who are managing material money, that they're managing large assets, not just a small amount, and that they have again, material track record, that they've been doing this, and there's a track record at least going back for decades. What you'll notice is most of the people that get people excited are not professional money managers. They've never managed a penny in their life. And if they have managed anything, it's a small amount and or they don't have a track record. So it's completely different when you put it into context. And these individuals are going out there trying to grab sound bites and hoping, hey, if I throw enough things up against the wall, I'll get a national quote at some point in time. But when you go back and take a look at what they, at the things that they come up with, it's at the end of the day, it's amazing how many times 2, 3, 4 years later, you look back and say, everybody was reacting to that individual and how ludicrous it is, you know, a couple of years later. Thank goodness I didn't follow that crazy advice.
Well, actually, it's pretty interesting because even if we think back about 2008, you know, with the meltdown of some of our financial institutions, that if people had their cash and short-term money set aside, that they would actually do pretty well. So for example, can you give us a rough idea of, let's even say the worst 10 years, which is the last 10 years in the market, how people would have done with, let's even say, a 60-40 portfolio using the index funds that you promote, which are dimensional funds and through dimensional fund advisors? Would they have actually done pretty well, even with all the turmoil that we did experience?
Yeah, we can argue that the first 10 years of this this century that we're living in right now was arguably, if we go back 150 years, the worst decade from a lot of perspectives. And our average 60-40 portfolio was north of 6% on an annualized rate of return after all fees, expenses, et cetera. So we have to be careful, you know, how far we're beating ourselves up. And, you know, we're talking about how bad the market can be. We never want to challenge the finance gods, as we say, that's with a lowercase g. You know, we never want to challenge them, but you would have a hard time replicating another 10-year period, such as the last 10, when you had two uber bear markets, 2001 and 02, and then 08 and 09 contained within that decade. And yet we still had a very reasonable positive rate of return in the portfolio. And again, just to put it in perspective, with that 40% stock portfolio we were talking about earlier, Jim, you know, that was down in the worst year in the last 50 years, about 14%. 20% stock portfolio is just down 4.5%. So you can dramatically protect yourself with the asset allocation if it's structured properly in your portfolio.
Well, let me ask you this. So right now, I know that there's a lot of people who are freaking out. I see them in my office, if not every day, at least quite often. I'm thinking about one woman. Oh, no, everything's different. And I'll tell you what else is pretty funny. You know, I have I certainly have a lot of different type of clients, but I have actually two groups that I do a fair amount of work with. One are the college professors, and they're certainly a very bright group. And politically, they tend to be on the liberal side. And I also work with a lot of engineers, and they're also very bright group, and they tend to be on the conservative side. And the engineers say, oh, man, this country, you know, if Obama gets elected, we're just going down the tubes. It's going to be terrible. I'm really afraid, more afraid than I've ever been. And then you talk to the college professors, and they say, oh, man, the way the economy is with those Republicans, I'm so afraid. It's pretty interesting. And I guess your reaction is, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, the best thing to do is to start with a good long-term financial plan and then stick with it. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's correct. Not to start backwards and picking investments and letting that lead your decisions. You really need to start with a good, solid plan and work forward. And then surprisingly, if you just follow your nose, when we go through the process with prospective clients and clients, it really is, even though we arguably are talking about very high-level concepts, it's very brought down to a very blue-collar level and very understandable.
Well, what you do, I've been in business over 30 years. I've never seen any financial advisor do the detail work that you do, even down to the cable bill and the phone bill. And you do that to help you develop those different buckets that you were talking about. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it seems rather anal, but we tell clients if it's $10 or more per month, we want to capture it. And we do have very categories in there for adult beverages and different things as well. So, you know, we're making sure we're taking care of everybody's. I'm a wine guy myself, so we want to make sure we got that, you know, red wine. I want to make sure we got that in the budget. But, yeah, it really is important and really brings a lot of confidence to it. Because, you know, one thing that we tell individuals is that we're not going to, we can't just sit there. A lot of times people come in and they expect, okay, you're the expert, give me the answers. And some people are a little bit dismayed in initial conversation that when we tell them, you know, really as far as this goes, we're in a room full of equals and it's a collaborative process. It's customized for each and every individual, new family unit, individual that we come into contact with. And if we work through it together and they're surprised at how well it comes into focus and how much of it they understand and also how high of a comfort level that they have. You know, we've been told numerous times over the years that, you know, there's, you know, people joke around, like you said, they come in your office and we hear, hey, it's hard to tell you guys apart. You all wear suits and you're, you know, you talk well, et cetera. But at the end of the day, we've heard, I can't even put a number on it of how many people have said, you know what, I get a lot of answers from people and they tell me what to do and give me your life savings, let me manage it. But they don't know any of the, they don't know any of the data or any information we just went to. They don't know what my home equity line of credit payment is, what my electric bill is, what my car payment is, if I have one. And they understand, I've often said that Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh investors in a town is not, that don't just inherently, I mean, you do in your client base, but they don't really have a PhD in life, but they do have a PhD in life, not in investing. And just a lot of blue collars, a very high common sense level in and around Pittsburgh and southwestern Pennsylvania. And the process that we go through really appeals to that PhD in common sense that Pittsburghers have.
Yeah, I sometimes think of the millionaires next door that I think both you and I service. And I know I particularly have a lot of clients. And what's interesting is this is something that a lot of Pittsburghers and let's say the two groups have in common, the engineers the college professors, where a lot of my clients started life with not a lot of money. They got married even relatively young, and you know, they had the mortgage payment and the car payment and the kids' braces and then the kids' college, and it was really tough to save money. But when they put away money in their retirement plans, a lot of them are IRA heavy, but there is often a huge difference between what they have, even if they made the same amount of money. And it all comes back to the asset allocation that they chose for those many years. So for the people who were, let's say, risk averse or trying to time the market, they often got hurt and they might have 50% or less of the people who had a better asset allocation recognize that the money was long term and had the money more in the market, and particularly in your case, you know, with the 18,000 different companies and the extreme asset allocation. And the other thing that you guys do that I like is that you tend to weight or overweight areas that have traditionally done better, like small cap versus large cap or value versus growth.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. There's all this anxiety out there. And like you said, the average investor is getting 6% less than the underlying investment that he is invested in or she is invested in. Well, who benefits from all this anxiety? You know, you hear, I don't want to name names because I don't want to be sued, but you see crazy people running up and down, you know, with their hair on fire on TV and on the radio, warning people about this and that. Who is this anxiety serving?
At the end of the day, again, it is the people, the financial media and the securities industry. The securities industry, on average, loves anxiety. They love turnover in portfolio because turnovers equals cash flow. They really don't have any inherent reason to be behind a buy and hold strategy. I've been amazed, and every time I hear the story over the years when someone will come in, and they'll bring a family member in, and sometimes it'll be a middle-aged client. They'll bring mom or dad in, or mom and dad, and they'll say, you know, mom and dad are just getting some really terrible service, and I just can't get over it. You know, they have a portfolio, and it's a sizable portfolio every time when they discuss it, and they'll say, I just can't get over it. You know, they're not getting any service, any recommendations, any help, et cetera, and I'll just respond by saying, even without knowing anything about it, I'll say, well, they're just buying and holding. They're just holding on to the stocks that they have in a portfolio. And every single time, you know, the son or daughter will say, well, how do you know that? You don't even know anything about them yet. And I'll say, well, that's why they're not hearing anything back from their guy, because there's no revenues there. There's no income there. So it's really the more you can get people excited and anxious, the more trading there's going to be. And again, the securities industry just loves it. You take a look at any periods of high anxiety, all of the, let's even say, lower cost brokerage firms, the discount shops, their volumes just spike through the roof. And it's an extraordinarily profitable period for them from trading expenses.
Yeah, and see, where you and I have a different model, which is what I would call a true fiduciary model, where we both not only have a moral but a legal obligation to do what we think is best for the client. So rather than charging a client every time we buy or sell something, we actually have a fee, which I mentioned earlier, that we split, me doing the, let's say, some of the conceptual stuff, the Roth stuff, how much you could spend, some of the tax savings, estate planning, retirement planning, etc., you doing the investments. And we don't make money every time there is a buy or a sell. And that's actually a much different model. And the other thing is, and I don't want to mention any companies, but we have a moral and legal obligation to do what is best for the client, not what is best for our employer or the wirehouse or whatever company, financial company, that somebody's working. You also sometimes talk about what you call the malocation of capital. And I know that we have quite a few golfers out there, so maybe you could change this to a golf analogy to the types of investment mistakes people make and who does well in the long run.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the younger authors have been spinning. Charlie Ellis, decades ago, had written a book, and basically a lot of people just refer to it as How to Win the Loser's Game. And in it, he was a tennis fan, and it's the exact same story with golfers. When you talk to world-class golfers or world-class tennis players, you'll get the same response when you ask them, well, how do you win? How are you at this extraordinarily high level? And everyone expects them to see, well, I'm out hitting the ball. I'm hitting it harder, longer, faster, et cetera. But what you'll hear from them time and time again is that my goal is to have the fewest errors and make the fewest mistakes, and that the fewest errors and fewest mistakes equal success, winning the tournament, winning the championship, et cetera. And it's a direct story, direct analogy into our business when we start off with using strategic asset allocation, Jim, you mentioned earlier, not being tactical, not trying to time the market, which a lot of people are going through this emotional pool right now. Oh, it looks worse. I had 70% in stocks. I'm going to move down to 30, cut it in half, what have you. Then the diversification, indexing versus active and rebalancing. By along those four major road markers in investing, you're going to have less errors and less mistakes at every fork in the road, which is going to put you in a winner's circle at the end.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit boring. You know, you're not going to have the thrill of double, tripling, or even doing better with your Apple stock, for example. But you're also not going to have the enormous losses that you might with a more active strategy. And it sounds like this is actually what some of the writers might call a kind of a grown-up approach, which is a series of low-cost index funds using well-diversified portfolios, and in your case, actually the different buckets of different portfolios.
Yeah, slow and steady wins the day. When you talk about the adult approach, I would say Jack Bogle of Vanguard is the ultimate adult. I mean, he's the senior member of our area of the world, and Jack's been preaching the benefit of indexing since the 1970s, along with the team at DFA. And the ultimate adult, slow and steady, minimize your errors, and have a plan and stay on your plan.
Well, we don't have time to go through the actual investment results, but they are pretty impressive.
Okay, I want to thank you for listening to another Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Check out the show archives and listen on demand anytime at retiresecure.com. KQV listeners can receive free tickets to Jim Lang's Pittsburgh area workshops and more. Call the Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732. That's 412-521-2732. And reserve your seats and meet Jim Lang in person. Again, that's 412-521-2732.